Hello and welcome to Sustainable Warwickshire, a podcast talking about all things related to climate change and sustainability across the county of Warwickshire.
Hello, I'm Steve Smith, a director at Warwickshire County Council, and I'm your host of our podcast series, Sustainable Warwickshire. We hope to share some of the things being done to fight climate change and support biodiversity from across the county, and give you some ideas on what you can do to play your part. In this episode, we're going to be talking about adapting to the consequences of climate change. You'll remember the high temperatures we had in July last year, and that was pretty hot. But scientists have said that there is a 98% chance that one of the next 5 years will be the hottest on record. So we're going to have to learn to cope with the changes that this will bring to our environment. Joining me today to discuss how we can protect ourselves and our communities, we have Alan Carr, Senior Sustainability Advisor at Sustainability West Midlands, and Ben Brook, Chief Fire Officer at Warwickshire Fire and Rescue Services. If I could start with you, Alan, perhaps you can tell us, what is Sustainability West Midlands and what's your role there?
Of course, Steve. Yeah, so it's we're a small not-for-profit company. We've been operating for 21 years. And basically, our role is to support any other organisation in the region, really, public sector, private sector, third sector, with their sustainability aims and objectives. So that can be all sorts of different things, from energy to transport, waste and so on, but also today's topic as well around climate change adaptation. I'm the Senior Sustainability Advisor, and my role primarily is to project manage our various activities and also to bring more work into the organisation as well.
Ben, as Chief Fire Officer, perhaps you could explain the breadth of your role and the range of services that the fire service is involved in, particularly as it goes beyond its traditional work in responding to incidents.
Yeah, thanks, Dave, and good to meet you, Alan. So my role is Chief Fire Officer for Warwickshire Fire and Rescue Service. Most people think of a fire and rescue service traditionally as the big red fire engines that go out the doors to rescue and help people in their time of need, and that's absolutely what we are. But we also deliver prevention activities to prevent these things from happening, and we also protect people when they do happen through our business safety work, working with businesses to make sure they're safe in the event of an emergency. But we also do work around resilience as a fire and rescue service to make sure our communities and our services as resilient as we possibly can be. And then I also have that national role with the National Fire Chiefs Council. So that's a membership body that looks at the fire and rescue service at a national level and tries to make sure we've got a fire and rescue service that functions effectively on a wider national level. And lots of people have in fire and rescue service have a more national lead, and my lead role in that is environment, climate and sustainability.
Brilliant. And Alan, what led you to work in the area of sustainability? Where are your passions for this subject?
Oh, this is your life. Wow, this is great for a podcast episode. I've always been interested in it, Steve, to be honest. I think since I was at school, it was something that interested me, and I've been lucky enough to do then a degree and then gradually work my way through my career to do this. I'm just passionate about the impact that climate change is having on people, really, and the fact that, you know, we're kind of expecting people to deal with this on their own, and there shouldn't be that expectation. You know, we need to provide support, and I think I want to be one of those people that can help with that, and to make sure that, you know, we're not leaving people behind on this, and that we are providing that support to people that need it on this agenda, because it's so important, you know, and a lot of the time people don't know where to start and what to do. So I think if I can help in any small way with that, that's where my real passion lies, I think, with this role and trying to make a difference, really.
Yes. And Alan, could you explain for our listeners what adaptation means? Obviously, we think about tackling climate change as making, you know, as preventing the effects from getting worse. But obviously, the effects are here, given the temperatures that we had last year. So what does it mean in simple terms?
Well, that's exactly it, Steve. So obviously, a lot of people will have heard about carbon reduction and greenhouse gas emissions and things like that, and, you know, reducing those, which is, yes, a key part of this agenda. But actually, climate change adaptation is accepting that despite those emissions reductions, we are still seeing climate change happening anyway. As you said, we can no longer think of this as a future thing to deal with. It's happening right now. So the way I kind of see it, and it's useful to have this as an analogy, despite the nightmare that it was, is going back to the COVID-19 pandemic, where we had to fundamentally change what we did in our lives. And that, in a sense, is adapting. It's adapting to a pandemic. It's adapting to a new virus that had suddenly, you know, appeared. And what are we going to do about this? You know, how do we react? And adaptation to climate change is a bit like that. It's how can we change our processes? How can we change our tweak our infrastructure, our natural environment, and again, influence people to make perhaps different decisions in order to ensure that they are protected to the impacts of climate change, which include things like more intense and frequent flooding, more intense heat waves that we saw last year, for example, that I think we'll be talking a bit about later on, and things like wildfires and things like that as well. So it's helping with that response. How can we respond and react and adapt accordingly so we can be better prepared for those things in future?
And Ben, Alan's mentioned a number of effects there. I wonder how that's affected the work of the fire service, and thinking about last July as well, and your crews responding to some quite extreme situations, no doubt. And obviously there's been a long history of flooding in Warwickshire, or more recent history. So perhaps you can describe how it is for the fire service right now.
Yeah, the world in fire has changed significantly over the last 40 years, really. So, you know, that's the thing with climate change, is it takes a long time. It's happening quite slowly, but we are feeling the effects now. So, you know, we've experienced a significant reduction in the number of fires that we're attending, but we're attending such a wide range of events now and situations that we never thought we would before. We certainly had the large scale heats and wildfires last summer, which I can certainly talk more about, but we're working to understand how our climate is adapting here in the UK with Nottingham Trent University and Exeter University, and some of the predictions that are actually baked in now. This is what's going to happen for us into the future as a fire and rescue service in Warwickshire. Is, you know, we're 7 times more likely to have extreme rainfall for more than 10 days. So the risk of flooding is huge. We're 30 times more likely to have heat waves now. So we know we are going to have a large amount of fires moving into the future. So we had over 900 incidents across the country for wildfires last summer. We're 100 times more likely to see the hot that we've recently seen in the Netherlands, in France, here in Warwickshire, in the UK. We're 30 times less likely to have extreme cold weather in the spring. And temperatures going below 0.7 degrees. And that's going to happen. And there's other predictions that we need to think about for Warwickshire, even though it's not impacting us right now in Warwickshire. Around, we know that 1.2 billion people now live somewhere that is uninhabitable by heat by 2050. So we're going to have a different population in Warwickshire, different vulnerabilities that will really, really affect us and the emergency response functions and the prevention protection we need to do. We've already talked about wildfire and flooding a little bit, but storms as well, Steve. We're much likely to have storms and high winds, which affect us. With having periods of hot weather and wet weather as well, the soil structure changes, so we could have certainly impacts on our water and pipe work under the ground that could start cracking. Even building structures could change as well with collapsed structures. So I could go on for a long time talking about how we may, as an emergency service, have to adapt to the differing needs of our communities based on the actual effects of climate change that we're feeling today.
Yeah, quite alarming. And Ben, you've talked about some of the sort of structural environmental effects there. And Alan, I just wonder, the organisations you work with across the West Midlands, how that... Obviously, for this council and this fire service, you've heard some of the changes we've been making. But do you see that in other organisations and them having to react as well, the health service, for instance, and other councils?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a problem across the West Midlands. It's a problem across the country. There is a lot more that now needs to be done. And to use the health as an example, that it's NHS Trust. If you think about what NHS Trusts do, they're there to look after people. And there's two problems. One is that more people will get more illnesses as a result of, for example, overheating. So overheating of buildings and being out in really hot weather can lead to respiratory problems, greater respiratory problems. It can lead to heat stroke and all of those sorts of things. And obviously the NHS is under enough pressure as it is without having extra numbers of people having to come in, perhaps at a time of year where previously there were fewer people coming into hospital. But also NHS trusts and their buildings, their own hospitals, their GP surgeries, their care homes. How do we know if they're prepared for climate change? How do we know they're not going to overheat in summer, particularly overheating? Because I think flood risk is better understood. It's certainly not perfect. We still need to accept the fact that there will be, as Ben mentioned, around the storm side of things, more flash flooding perhaps that happens in places where it hasn't happened before. But certainly the issue of overheating in buildings is a massive problem for health and for things like productivity as well in workplaces and businesses and so on. It can affect all sorts of things that I don't think we even know about yet, sort of individual manufacturing companies who might have processes that are affected by changes in temperature and things like that. So there's all sorts of things that we are beginning to see and what we're trying to help with as best we can at SWM to try and sort some of those things out for people.
Mm. Yes, the public health effects are massive, but also how it affects people in their jobs and, as you say, different industries. It just reminds me, Ben, that obviously for the firefighters in your service having to deal with these incidents, extremes, it must put an extra strain on them as well, having to deal with, they're wearing heavy equipment, they're wearing protective equipment. It's no easy feat, is it?
Oh, it really isn't, Steve. And when you hear you and Alan talking about the impacts, it is significant for our firefighters. So last summer, we had 5 firefighters who suffered heat exhaustion incidents. It is significant for us having to work in that heat. And we're just not as prepared as some other countries who've experienced perhaps wildfires for a long time. And I definitely think there's something for us to think about around psychological distance, that we've been quite distant from some of the impacts of climate change for a period of time. We've got to start recognizing it's coming closer and closer. And last summer, we felt that, and our firefighters felt it, that actually climate change is here and it's happening now in the UK, when previously I think we've been a little bit psychologically distant from that because it hasn't been impacted right here, right now. And we're starting to feel that change, I think. And just on it, Steve, it's easy to think about those wildfires we experienced, but every single incident type we attend went up last summer. So whether that be road traffic collisions, water rescue, house fires, commercial fires in businesses, every single incident type went up in a heat wave. And it's because of the vulnerability of our people and the vulnerability of our infrastructure, which isn't there yet in relation to resilience and sustainability.
No, indeed. And Alan, the central question, does it matter, when temperatures rise? And it's not just about heat, but as you say, you've mentioned, both of you have mentioned various points about different effects of the climate at different times of the year and the health implications on that. Alan, have you got one or two examples you can draw upon to give our listeners a flavour of the kind of advice and guidance you've been giving at Sustainability West Midlands to other organisations?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's two primary resources that we've published in the last, only in the last year, really. So one is for small businesses. It's a document called Weathering the Storm. It was actually published about 11 or 12 years ago originally, and we've kind of resurrected it because it was a really simple guide that outlined almost a checklist, really, of what small businesses can do to improve their overall resilience. So that will include things like how can they improve their flood risk capabilities and adapting to those potentially more flood risk issues, and also things like water scarcity. So, we might experience more droughts. We've got a particularly dry spell going on at the moment across the country, and who knows, that may lead to water scarcity issues if it continues for the next few weeks or whatever it might be. So it's things like that. But also that document also focuses on things like cybersecurity, insurance and financial risk, premises issues, things like that as well, because we recognize that, you know, businesses may not necessarily want to read a document that's just about climate change. They might want to read a document that covers all manner of different risks and things like that. So that's been published and is on our website, is free to use for anybody, any business in any part of the country, really, even though it's a West Midlands document, it would be relevant to any business. And similarly, for local authorities, we published a series of practical examples of what climate change adaptation actually looks like on the ground, because, you know, it's all very well saying we've got strategies, documents, policies and so on and so forth. That's fine. But what we need now is action. And in this document that we've put together is basically a page by page case study of practically what local authorities have participated in or led on that has actually led to actual tangible differences in terms of reducing flood risk or helping people keep cool in heat waves and so on and so forth again. So those documents are all online. We're doing another similar piece of work for the NHS, as we've just mentioned, this year as well. So there'll be something for them to come out later this year to help NHS trusts adapt as well. So our role is really to catalyse that response. You know, I'd love to say, you know, we can give millions of pounds to every organisation across the region to be more resilient to climate change. Clearly, we can't do that, but at least we can provide advice, guidance, signposting. And those documents are a really up-to-date key part of us trying to do that.
That's really good advice and good to signpost some practical help there. We've touched on flooding a little bit, Ben. I just want to concentrate on that, because any discussion in Warwickshire about climate adaptation would have to cover flooding, given the major events that, since I've been working for Warwickshire County Council, I've experienced in flooding in 1998 and more so in 2007. I was trapped. I couldn't get home. I was trapped between Warwick and Evesham. So I know what it's about, but it can have devastating effects. Interested to hear, you know, how the fire service are combating that. Obviously, the training and the development and the equipment investment goes on all the time. But it'd be useful to have a bit of a download from you about flooding in Warwickshire and how prepared we can be. Obviously, there's been adaptation schemes as well, prevention schemes as well. But be good to hear from yourself about the whole issue of flooding in Warwickshire.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. I will focus on the adaptation part rather than the mitigation part, like you say, because we do a lot of work around mitigation, but around adapting to it. So, you know, flooding is a significant risk for us in Warwickshire, but also locally in Hereford and Worcester as well, and Shropshire. So within our region, it's a significant risk that we work collaboratively around. So that's a really important part, I think, around climate, sustainability and the environment, is that we focus in on collaboration and not trying to achieve this just ourselves. I think that has to be a focus for us in all of our activity. However, we are focused on serving our communities in Warwickshire and being prepared for this. So we've got specialist water rescue capabilities that can be deployed from a number of our locations, but specifically from Rugby, where we have boat train crews there that are very good at doing swift water rescue activities. But all of our firefighters now are actually trained in water rescue to a certain degree. So whatever resource we mobilise, we can deal with that. We work with our partners as well, the police, Warwickshire Police in the area, to make sure that we're dealing with that as well. And it'd be remiss of me not to mention now that it was Water Safety Week a couple of weeks ago. So it's clear that not just with flooding, but with heat spells as well, people tend to take to the water. People tend to like to go for a swim, whether that being quarries, rivers, canals. So the water poses a risk, whether it's during times of flood or other times of heat as well. So really keen to make sure people are aware of some safety messages around water safety, what to do in those scenarios. We recognise people will want to cool down and enjoy the water, but it's really important they make sure they're safe when doing so, and that they do it as safely as they possibly can.
Yeah, absolutely. Very strong messages there. And do you work with other agencies as well? I mean, the other blue light services, police and ambulance, and how we connect with with our health partners as well, because obviously this we need to make sure that we're all working together on these agendas. And as you've mentioned, your work on the National Fire Chiefs Council, you must have access to learning in other parts of the country who must be experiencing maybe similar or even different effects. What's the national picture looking like?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. So, yes, we're working with other partners all the time. So we work heavily at the moment in my national role with the Met Office, with the Climate Committee down in London, with academic establishments like I talked about Exeter, Nottingham Trent University. And Exeter University have actually got a future-focused fire climate change group that look at actually making predictions into the future around what this could look and feel like from a fire perspective for us, because it is a real resource challenge for us, because at the moment we have a fairly similar number of resources available all the time to respond when people need us, but these are real surge events where you need a lot of people very, very quickly, so it makes it very, very challenging to manage. So we are working collaboration around that through the local resilience forums as well, which is a forum where partners come together and plan for these sort of events, which is really, really important to us as well. So we're working with all the key partners to make sure that we are working collaboration to be as best prepared as we can for these events into the future. But I think it's a challenge for us, Steve. I guess I'll place that challenge out to a lot of organisations around how long do we plan for into the future. So most organisations will plan 3 to 5 years into their futures in their strategy and through their financial plans. But climate change, you are really looking 20, 40, 50, 100 years into the future, and you need to be planning that far ahead. So I guess there's a bit of a challenge from me around how are organisations really planning around climate, environment, sustainability when they're only looking 3 to 5 years ahead.
Absolutely. And thinking of infrastructure now, Alan, really, I mean, I know your organisation has connections with people like Severn Trent and National Grid in particular, and they obviously are managing major infrastructure using significant materials, reactor heat and cold as well. So it's how do you think those organisations are preparing? I mean, I see a lot of our roads being dug up at the moment for Severn Trent, so I know they've got a job on their hand to manage leaks, but what's your view from Sustainability West Midlands about some of the infrastructure that could be affected?
Yeah, there's bad news and good news, I guess, and Ben's alluded to some of this already. So the bad news is that there's two pieces of bad news, really. One is that, as Ben says, climate change is ever changing, in the sense that one minute we think it's one thing, the next minute we think it's something else, and we have to suddenly change. We haven't seen this before. What do we do now? You know, so there's lots of variation within the system that infrastructure organizations have to adapt to as well. So that's the first challenge. And the second challenge, frankly, is the lack of legislation. So the good news to counteract that is there is something called the Adaptation Reporting Power, which is a mechanism that government led, but basically is mostly for infrastructure companies, whereby they report on what they're doing on climate change adaptation every year, or every few years, I think it is, to say, you know, this is what we've done, these are our plans, etc. But even that isn't mandatory. It's a voluntary thing that thankfully most infrastructure organisations do respond to. But at the local level, so if we're talking about highways, for example, that are managed by local authorities don't have to report against that reporting power. And there's nothing mandatory apart from on flood risk that they need to do. That's the real challenge. So obviously, when there's no mandatory legislation there, it's really difficult for the likes of us to come along and say, you have to do this, you have to do this, because they could come back and say, we don't have the resource to do this because we don't have the legislation bringing that resource forward. So that's the biggest challenge. And that really does affect infrastructure, because first of all, infrastructure is very complex. One thing affects something else, affects something else, like that cascading effect where you have, you know, if a substation goes down because it's flooded, for example, think of the impacts that would have, the knock-on impacts that would have. So we are aware that U7 Trent, as an example, they are doing a lot of work on this. They're really trying. They've got adaptation plan in place. they're trying to keep up to date with all of this that's going on, and to make sure that they, you know, respond as they need to, and that they do build, you know, 50 plus year scenarios into their planning. You know, they're thinking about interacting with the likes of Welsh Water as well, and other water companies, to make sure that the flow is correct, and to make sure that down to the level of people's homes, where they're water saving campaigns and things like that, at the sort of household level. So there's a lot going on. You know, Network Rail's another example. They've got officers there who specifically focus on this agenda, where they're trying to make the railway more resilient. But we all know that when there's an extreme weather event, the trains don't work. That's always been the case, and that's going to be the case more frequently. So it's a big, big challenge. The infrastructure companies are doing their best, but as ever, there needs to be more done. And it's really difficult to kind of encourage that when there isn't that sort of overarching legislation from above, really, to do that.
Sure. We want to bring our discussion round to a positive view and outlook. Of course we do. So I'll ask you both, starting with you, Ben, in terms of looking to the future and the development and the research that you have access to, and how we might best adapt. We want to be able to manage the rising temperatures with our own mitigation, of which we've talked about different types in previous podcasts. But looking to the future and being able to cope and adapt going forward, what's your view? What could emerge? What new things might be on the horizon?
Yeah, Steve, I think as a fire and rescue service, we are very focused on risk and managing risk. That has been a core heart of what a fire and rescue service does. We're not a demand-led organisation, so it's not about the number of incidents we go to. It's more around the risk that's present. And often when that risk is realised, it requires a significant level of resource. So we probably structure ourselves as a fire and rescue sector nationally in a very, very different way to lots of other public services, which I think sets us up in a really strong position for the future, because I think we are going to see different demands on the fire and rescue service, but we are acutely aware of how to manage risk in this way. So I think we're structured quite well. We're quite adaptable to do that. We've adapted and changed over the last 40 years, as I described. We're also very, very focused in on prevention and preventing the impacts, or reducing how those impacts are felt in our communities, and focusing on creating resilient communities so they become resilient themselves to manage these type of events. And I think that's what we need to be doing. We need to recognise that although we want to help people in these events, we also need people to help themselves. We need to get to a situation where people feel that they also can help and support their neighbours, their colleagues, their friends through this. That's a really important thing to do moving forward. I think we're in that space. I think we're working really hard to get there, whilst also making sure little things like changing vehicles, changing our protective clothing, and how we operate. We're also doing those sorts of things as well. So I think we're well placed at the moment. However, are we doing enough right now? There's always more to do.
Yes. And Ben, on a practical point of view, if we think about some of the quite normal things that we as the general public can do, and I know there was a big push last year about avoiding the use of disposable barbecues, and there must be other things we can do to be very mindful of not starting fires inadvertently, and other things. Have you got some top tips for our listeners?
Yeah, of course, Steve. So definitely, you've mentioned barbecue safety. That's a big one. I'd expand that from disposable barbecues to all barbecues. So as soon as you get a heat source onto dry land or dry grassland or whatever it might be, you're going to have a problem there. But it is the basic little things as well. You know, I think everyone knows the combustion triangle and what you need to start a fire in these sort of events. So I won't go through that. But, you know, if you have a piece of glass in the sunshine, a mirror, anything like that, it's going to cause potentially a fire to occur. So those are the things we need to be thinking about, I think. Interestingly, a lot of the fires last summer were also caused by machinery hitting stones in the ground that cause a spark as well. So that probably actually caused more fires than disposable barbecues. So there's lots of different ways we need to think about this and manage our land. Ultimately, this comes down to land management as well in the preventative space. But there's lots of things our people can do around this to try and mitigate the impacts.
Machinery hitting stones. Now, who'd have thought of that? Nobody really. Mind you, who'd have thought designing a building in the centre of London with so convex a shape that it would act as a magnifier as well? But there you go. And so, yeah, building designers have got to keep these things in mind, haven't they? And buildings will start having more machine, well, particularly in the UK, more air conditioning adaptation, etc., etc. So, yeah.
Definitely, Steve. I remember when I was doing my promotion exams, there was always a question around how far to start. And one of the answers was always a passing locomotive. And I always thought, that's just ridiculous. That's just a crazy answer. But now it's probably more real because, sparks and from wheels and, you know, it's actually probably more real. But I used to think it was crazy when I did my exams. But there you go.
Oh. And Alan, in terms of your advice, whether that's to individuals or the companies and the people you work with, any views from yourself?
I think a really key thing, Steve, is to look after each other when these events happen. You know, community spirit, Ben's just mentioned it there about community resilience. When do communities come together? It's when there's times of trouble and when there's times of crisis and when things happen, and floods and overheating events and wildfires are an example of that. You know, when do we see communities working together to help each other out? But it's also simple things as well. So, for example, during a heat wave, you've got an elderly next door neighbour, or, you know, someone's got a health problem, you know, living nearby. Check in on them, you know, when it's particularly hot. Go and ask how they are. Do they need anything? Can they get outside to get what they need? You know, have they got a fan, you know, in the house? Simple things like that can be really, really effective as a starting point. So just that helping hand, really, that you know, again, learning from things like the pandemic, where we saw people working together to make sure other people were okay. It's as simple as that. You know, those sorts of actions and empowerment that we saw. And, you know, there's lots of little things that can be done around that. And I think that's what keeps me going, really. It does happen. You know, we do have that community spirit in Warwickshire and in the wider West Midlands. It's there. And it's things like this that can really bring that out, as well as the fact that we are seeing pockets of good practice emerge from different parts of the region that we want to promote and shout about. And people are doing this. They realise this is a problem and there are things happening. So let's get on the bandwagon and make sure that we work, as Ben said earlier, collaboratively with other organisations to scale up these projects and make sure that they can happen at a bigger scale.
Absolutely. And there will be effects, and people will be thinking and listening to this thinking that there is effects on our biodiversity, you know, species that start to migrate further north because the temperatures are suitable. I think we've just been reading, haven't we, about this, what was it, the black-veined white that's now was extinct in the UK and now he's back. Maybe that's isolated, but who knows? But it's things like that that start to happen. And the impact on flora and fauna is not to be misunderstood. And we may have to come back to that subject at a future podcast, really. But thank you both, Alan, Ben, for joining me today. Been really informative. And what I've taken from it is that there's a lot more to this subject of adaptation than meets the eye, really, given the extensive work through the National Fire Chiefs Council and the research that's been done, Ben, and the adaptations that the service, your service, has been making, and the far-reaching remit of Sustainability West Midlands, Alan, and the talking to the infrastructure companies, talking to the other parts of the public sector, advising companies, small businesses, etc., to play their part. And I think that's really important, as well as communities, as you say, looking out for each other in these changing times. So thank you both. That is the end of today's episode of our Sustainable Warwickshire podcast. If you'd like to find out more about climate change in Warwickshire, please do visit www.warwickshireclimateemergency.org.uk. Here you'll find a whole section on adaptation in Warwickshire, including the risks that have been identified to our county and the Warwickshire County Council plans to respond to them. Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed the conversation and would like to hear more of the same, then please do subscribe, and we'll be back next month with more.